The next case is OO236, Board of Education of the Coloma City School District versus Franklin County Board of Revision. Mr. Corey.
I thank the court again. My name is James Corey. I'm here on behalf of Jeff Rich, who represents the Board of Education City Coloma School District. I'm well aware that I may end up eating my words, but the BTA's decision in this case is bizarre. It is simply bizarre. The question is whether or not a county board of revision must have some, a little, one piece of competent and probative evidence in order to grant a substantial reduction in the true value of the property. The BTA specifically held that no evidence presented to the Franklin County Board of Revision was competent probative evidence. Now, the only evidence, of course, was Garvin's appraisal and Garvin's testimony. Yet, the BTA ended up affirming the BOR's decision, and you can imagine our surprise when we read the first part of the BTA decision that says Garvin's appraisal isn't worth the paper it's printed on, which is why, of course, we filed the appeal, and then we end up losing the case. Because the BTA holds that when there is no competent probative evidence before the BOR, that it's required by law to affirm the decision of the BOR. We indicated in our brief, and we submit this morning, that violates standard, well-settled principles of administrative law.
What do you think the BTA should have done?
The BTA should have affirmed, after holding that no competent and probative evidence was submitted to the Board of Revision, one would have hoped that the BTA would have then reversed the BOR and affirmed the county auditor's value. I believe this court's got to stick to that principle. Otherwise, you are going to allow boards of revision to grant reductions without having any competent or affirmative evidence before them.
What if they just reviewed all the evidence below and then came up with their own?
Well, that creates somewhat of an anomaly because the BTA held that there was no competent evidence in the record by which it could determine the. Now, you've held that where this court has held that where the Board of Revision no changes the value, then you get up at the BTA and there's no competent evidence of value. The BTA may, by law, affirm the Board of Revision's value, which constitutes an affirmation of the county auditor's original assessed value. That's fine. But where the property owner comes before a Board of Revision, this court should have no sympathy for the situation. When the owner comes before a Board of Revision, fails to present a single item of competent and probative evidence, then it's not entitled to a reduction in value. It's not difficult to present some competent and probative evidence of value to a board of revision. And that is, as this court has said, in LCL income properties, the primary obligation of the property owner to present some competent and probative evidence.
Well, it'd be the property owner or the appellant.
That is correct. Someone has to. And it's axiomatic. When there is no competent or probative evidence submitted to the Board of Revision, then you can't get a reduction in value. You can't get an increase in value.
As I looked at the record of this, at least the supplements that were filed in this case, there was the county auditor's appraisal records, property records.
That is correct.
In there, so the BTA could have looked at those.
Yes, and those showed a value of $1.4 million. There was nothing wrong with those records. Nobody ever questioned them.
Let me pose a hypothetical here. A lot of these cases we see, the property records are not in here. What would you do in a situation where there were no property records and you had an appraisal like this, and the BTA throws it out. Now, what did they have to look at? What did they do?
I mean, that is the responsibility of the property owner to defend, in some sense, the reduction it got. We can't let this thing go off into never-never land. The property owner should present some evidence to the BOR or to the BTA to support the reduction it got. And when the property owner doesn't, then the property owner is at risk. It didn't present competent probative evidence to the BOR. It didn't deserve a reduction. It gets up to BTA. It presents nothing. And the BTA holds that the owner did not initially carry its burden of proof. The owner is always at risk. And the Board of Education, if it's seeking an increase, that is a rational system of law.
Well, let's look at it another way. You were the appellant, I believe, at the board, your client, and you bear the burden to show that the action of the POR is improper.
That is correct. And we believe we carried that burden by showing that there was no competent or probative evidence submitted to the BOR. And, of course, furthermore, the evidence showed a value of $960,000, and we ended up with a BOR value of $600,000. Just utter craziness here. I want to emphasize that I would indicate that I think equally bizarre is the claim, perhaps that's not the appropriate word, the claim that there's evidence missing from the record. The evidence in question was the appellee's evidence. And so the appellee comes before the court and says, well, there's evidence missing from the record. That's the appellee's evidence. And yet no place in the record, either before the BTA or at the Supreme Court, has the appellee identified what that missing evidence is. I don't believe there's any evidence missing at all. Garvin presented in the 80s Broad Street case, the other one, Garvin presented the same appraisal. And in this case, the Broad and High properties, he presented the appraisal. There's nothing missing. That's all that was presented to the BOR in each case was Garvin's testimony and Garvin's appraisal. These two properties are not an economic unit, and I believe that argument is a red herring. Garvin specifically said in his appraisal report that each property is separate, constitutes a separate tax parcel, is appraised separate and apart.
We have Garvin's appraisal in the record.
That is correct. What Garvin said was that if a property owner owned all of the property Broad and High, which Chester and Soloff do not own, then all of this property would be looked at as an economic unit. Interestingly enough, he said that it wouldn't be developed as an office building probably for the next 10 years because there's no demand for that. But at the present time, the property we're talking about had a net operating income of $120,000, net operating income. And yet we end up with a BOR value of $600,000, which is a cap rate of about 5, which is extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. There was no allocation of value between these properties, and that's another claim that the appellee made in this brief.
We don't have any evidence.
No. All we have is Garvin's appraisal of this property and Garvin's appraisal.
Let's talk about notes. BOR's notes.
That is correct. The BOR lost the file in the other case, which was 80s Broad Street, the office building right over there. As I indicated, I don't believe there's any evidence with respect to this property missing, and the appellant has not identified any such evidence. Once again, we'd ask the court to consider the consequences of this thing. You've got the BTA holding, apparently, that a property owner can get a reduction from a BOR with less than competent and probative evidence. I can't conceive of this.
We don't know of any evidence in the file that would take it below 900,000, do we?
There is no evidence whatsoever to justify any reduction less than Garvin's appraisal of $960,000. The property owner, as I recall, in its complaint before the BOR asked for $850,000, but I suspect that was done before Garvin's appraisal was finished. Everyone admits that no one has any clue how the BOR arrived at the $630,000. Now, the appellee claims that there's an allocation based on evidence in the other case, the economic unit, that property was the other property may have been appraised or may have been valued too high, and consequently there was a reduction in the value of this property below what it was worth. But if you put the two together, you get some kind of satisfactory value. Well, our answer to that is they are separate properties. If the appellee thought the value of the 80s Broad Street property was too high, the appellee should have filed an appeal. The appellee's own evidence, own appraiser, supports and only supports a value of $962,600. So I believe the consequences are extraordinary. If a county board of revision can grant a reduction in value, in this case a substantial one, without any competent or probative evidence, then I believe the system is spinning off in never land. I mean, I have no clue as to how we'll protect the duplicate, tax list and duplicate of a board of education, any board of education in this state under those circumstances. I thank the court.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ann Rita Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the appellee property owners, Chester and Solov. With respect to this case at hand, I think the fundamental issue in this case is whether or not the appellate before the Board of before a Board of Tax Appeals can take advantage of the fact that part of the record that was relied on by the Board of Revision was missing. Mr. Gorey, Mr. Rich, as well as Mr. Gillis were not at that Board of Revision hearing. I was at that Board of Revision hearing, and Mr. Garvin testified at length about these properties being one economic unit. That is why he prepared one appraisal for both properties. There was missing evidence. The Board of Education never made any attempt whatsoever to try to reconstruct the record, to provide any evidence to the Board of Tax Appeals as to what happened in that case. It was well known before they waived hearing that a portion of the record was missing. That became evident during a mediation conference. It also became evident, if you look at the statutory transcript, where the hearing worksheet very clearly says, see, I believe it's 93-576 for evidence. The tape of this record also, I believe at least twice on there, makes reference to the evidence presented in the other case. So the dilemma is, and if the facts were as Mr. Gorey states, we wouldn't be here today, but the dilemma is that there is evidence that was missing, and general appellate procedure requires the appellate, who the Board of Education was at the BTA, to produce an entire record or not be able to rely on a burden of proof argument. Here they say the property owners failed to meet their burden of proof. Based upon the evidence that was certified to the Board of Tax Appeals with the notes that some evidence was in another case that they never certified, and attempts were made by the county to provide that, search their records, and the county finally indicated to the Board of Tax Appeals it could not locate this missing evidence.
Let me ask you, though, doesn't that lead to a problem here in the sense that the county sets any value they want and then says, oh, we lost the evidence? Isn't that a bad precedent?
It's a bad precedent, but the taxpayer did go to the Board of Revision. They did present evidence. They examined witnesses, not just Mr. Garvin, but Mr. Power was also part of that evidence that was missing. Is it fair for a taxpayer to have to twice when as a total, the value as a total, when you add 8 East Broad as well as the subject property, came very close to the total value that they were seeking for both properties, which they are holding for future development?
I think there's one parcel for 80 East Broad?
One parcel for the office building, and I believe 5 parcels for the various retail.
We're concerned with what, 5 parcels here?
5 parcels.
Okay. But we don't have any evidence that they were, quote, economic unit, do we?
Yes, we do.
What do we have?
We have the appraisal of Mr. Garvin on the first page. He talks about their development as the highest and best use under Park Ridge, a property that's held by a single owner, maybe valued as a single economic unit, provided that it is the highest and best use of that property. Mr. Garvin makes reference to that on the first page of his appraisal report, which is in the second supplement that was provided by the appellees in this case on page 15. And in the missing part of the record, he did testify and was questioned about this being one economic unit. And the highest and best value is for redevelopment, although it hasn't happened. But I think it's significant that if you read the board's case and their decision, the only elements of Garvin's appraisal that they discuss is his income approach. They criticize him not having market rents and also his capitalization rate. They don't discuss his present value analysis or anything else that was in his report or his market approach. It's also significant that the Board of Revision, when they made their reductions, didn't reduce the value of the buildings. They didn't rely on Garvin's economic approach because the buildings are what are leased and provide the income stream, not the land. So that gives an indication that the Board of Revision wasn't relying on his economic approach or the income approach that revealed a value of 960. I think the Board of Revision heard the cases together and made a determination based upon the evidence in both cases, based upon Mr. Garvin's testimony that these were one economic unit, and I don't think it was the taxpayer's burden at the Board of Tax Appeals to supply this missing evidence. It was the burden of proof was on the Board of Education as the appellate to prove a different value.
What What does an appellant do when there's missing evidence?
An appellant is supposed to try to reconstruct the evidence, either by getting an agreed statement with opposing counsel or by other means, but not just...
How do we know for a fact that there is missing evidence in this case? What was presented in this case, what's missing?
What's missing is the testimony of John Garvin in the other case involving whether there was one economic unit, involving whether his allocation of his value, which he based on an income approach, was...
That was to be, or how do we know that that was to be considered part of this case?
Because if you...
BOR just didn't do it.
Because if you listen to the tape, the BOR was requested to consider the testimony that was presented in the other case in this case. The hearing worksheet also references the other case for evidence. And I was there. And maybe next time I go there, we'll present the case twice, if that's the situation, in fear of a record being missing. But we presented the case. Both parties, as well as the Board of Revision, agreed to consider the evidence just presented to them involving, as that tape would reveal, the same economic unit. And under those facts, I can't see how this court can penalize a property owner who presented a full case before the Board of Revision, thought they received a fair decision, not allocated according to their appraisal, but allocated differently.
Now, what value did the board come up with in this case plus the other case?
It came up with a value of $1,430,000. Mr. Garvin had value indications of $1,418,000 in his present value analysis, and I believe he had another range of values that number would fit in.
Okay. You didn't submit any affidavits or anything?
No, but we believe we did not have the burden of proof at the Board of Tax Appeals. They could have subpoenaed Mr. Garvin to testify. They could have requested the Board of Revision or somehow or other to make a complete record before the Board of Tax Appeals. Instead, they chose to rely on a missing record. And the cases I cite in my brief make it very clear when you're the appellate before a reviewing court, and you want to make a sufficiency of the evidence argument or a burden of proof argument, the record has to be complete, because it's easy to say somebody didn't meet their burden of proof when part of the evidence is missing. I would agree with Mr. Gorey if the facts were as he stated, that there's no missing evidence. But there is missing evidence. The record is clear that there's missing evidence. And if you look at the decision of the Board of Revision, it wasn't, they filled out a worksheet, they did calculations. It wasn't something that they just kind of arbitrarily decided, oh, we like these guys, we're going to give them a bigger reduction than they asked for. I think it was a very methodical thing that they did, and they considered both records. Unfortunately...
We don't know what they did.
But do we ever really know what they do?
Well, that's what the evidence is there. Does it support what they did?
Well, this particular case is difficult because evidence is missing. And that's what makes it hard for a reviewing court to say whether what they did was reasonable or unreasonable.
If the BPA said, we don't like Mr. Garvin's appraisal, so whatever Mr. Garvin said is sort of out the door. Shouldn't the BPA have gone back then and looked at the record, you know, what was there? You're saying that the BOR relied on Mr. Garvin's analysis of this as an economic unit, and his appraisal of the whole thing as an economic unit. But BTA said, we don't like Mr. Garvin's appraisal, didn't they?
BTA said that they didn't like Mr. Garvin's economic approach. They never really discussed any other elements of his appraisal. They used very broad language, and yes, they basically threw it out, but I think what they basically threw out was his income approach, but the language is there that you could read it, that they threw out his whole appraisal. But they never discussed his two other approaches of value that was used in that appraisal. I think they wanted to throw out the 960 that the Board of Education was urging before the BTA.
Well, they had to throw, I view it as they had to throw the whole thing out. They didn't say we accept any part of it, but let's start with that.
That's true.
So if they didn't accept any part, they rejected it. They rejected every part, I guess. How else could they have done that? If they didn't accept it, they had to reject it.
They definitely rejected his income approach. There's no language in that decision that there is language in the decision that his appraisal wasn't competent evidence, but I don't. If you read that paragraph as a whole, all they're talking about is his income approach.
Well, my point is that, I guess I'm going to, what do we do here when they throw out his appraisal? What did the BTA, or the BOR, excuse me, have to base their decision on?
They had evidence in the other case. Case was heard in October of 1995.
I understand.
And it was quite some time, and I alone can recall, but to this court or to anybody else, it would seem like it was self-serving. But there was evidence that was presented with both appraisers talking about these properties, because Mr. Power didn't appraise the property, but he was asked questions about economic units and other things at that hearing. I think it's unfortunate that the record is missing, but I don't think my client should be prejudiced by the county losing a record that actually became final by operation of law, when all the parties accepted the value that was in that case, and there can be drawn an implication that the Board of Revision proceedings were proper, and there was nothing unusual or other than the record being missing.
We don't know.
Yeah, but there's a presumption that they perform their statutory duty in good faith. And I don't think this is an instance where the Board of Revision just said, well, we want to give them a reduction, so we'll give them a number that their appraiser didn't testify to. I think they used the evidence in both cases, valued the property as an economic unit, and issue two separate decisions. I ask that this court affirm the decision of the BTA based upon the record as well as whatever the missing evidence is, because that missing evidence is significant to their determination. And again, I don't think an appellate, as a BOE was before the BTA, can take advantage of the fact of there being evidence to say my client did not meet its burden of proof.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Gore, you have about 3 minutes.
I thank the court. I will not take the 3 minutes. I believe there has to be something in the record that supports, in even a minimal sense, the claim that the missing evidence had some effect on anybody's determination of the value.
Some of the records we get from boards of revision, as you're well aware, are pretty skimpy. What does this court or the BTA do when there really isn't anything? Here it's missing, but, you know, what do we do?
Well, first, I believe you look at the evidence to see whether there's any indication that the missing evidence was relevant, because that satisfies, I believe, the threshold question.
How do we know there's missing evidence?
Well, in this case, you don't. But I submit the court is required to look at that claim with a jaundiced eye, because the evidence that is before the court does not support the claim that Garvin, that anyone, considered these properties as an economic unit. If you look at the supplement on page 17, that's Garvin's appraisal. He says the highest and best use of the property remains to continue in its present mode of operation. His conclusion on page 27 was, based upon considerations as stated, the greatest weight must go to value conclusions based upon the property as it is presently operated and improved. The likelihood of an assemblage and redevelopment of the land in the foreseeable future is remote. So the appraiser is telling you that I didn't appraise this property as an economic unit. Under those circumstances, then I believe the court is required to say to the party who claims evidence is missing, prove it. You make a claim, you prove it. Unfortunately, there's no proof in this case. The evidence does not support, in fact, it contradicts the claim of missing evidence. And that's where the court comes down, in my opinion, on this issue. I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. The case will be submitted to the court and will be advised to meeting called. Thank you.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. These hearings, the Supreme Court of Ohio, Master Commissioners, now stands adjourned.